A multi-year effort to find a cure for HIV has concluded, but the Trailblazer study wasn't the success researchers had hoped for. Will the work continue? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about what the study found and what cuts to federal funding mean for future research are University of Cincinnati Vice Chair for Clinical Research for Internal Medicine, Dr. Carl Fichtenbaum, Trailblazer study participant Carl Fox, Director of the UCSF Bay Area Center for AIDS Research, Dr. Monica Gandhi, and Director of the Center for HIV and Infectious Disease Policy at Georgetown Law, Jeffrey Crowley. Thank you all so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Lucy.
Dr. Fichtenbaum, we had you and Carl on the program in 2023 to talk about this study to find a functional cure for HIV. Remind us just briefly how you hoped that would work.
Yeah, so thanks very much for having us back on. Obviously, we would have loved to have been on and told you something much more positive. But what we were trying to accomplish was, could we somehow make a difference and have a signal where we were lowering the amount of HIV in a person by doing something a little bit unique and novel, which is taking some of their cells out of their body, changing those cells so that they no longer had the receptor for HIV on the surface of those cells called CCR5, and then giving those cells back to them. We thought that we might be able to lower the amount of HIV in their body, not that they would be cured, but we would have a signal we were heading in the right direction. But unfortunately, the results did not turn out that way.
Mm-hmm. What did you find?
Well, we found that there was no difference. So in this study of 30 people that was done at three sites, Case Western University, University of California, San Francisco, and the University of Cincinnati, we found that when we enrolled these folks, 19 of whom were assigned to the study treatment and 11 of whom were assigned a placebo, there was absolutely no difference after 2 years. When we looked at the amount of HIV in each person, it was the same as it was at baseline as it was 2 years later. And it didn't matter whether you were in the placebo group or you were in the group where we changed your cells. Mm.
Carl, you've been living with HIV since the 1980s. You volunteered to be part of this research. Were you disappointed when you heard these results? I mean, you went through some discomfort to be part of this study.
Yes, obviously I was. I was very disappointed. The initial reaction is, I think, I burst into tears. But I've been in other studies, and I've had very great success. And I'm alive after all these years. I was diagnosed with HIV in 1985, and even through this, I read an article you wrote that informed me that I only had a 4.5%, 4.5%. It just still stuns me. And so, as difficult as this study is, one, I would do it all again. I'm optimistic. I've told Dr. Fichtenbaum many times that I know he's going to cure me, and I'm still sure of that. And I believe that they're on the right track. And so it was difficult, but I'd do it again, and I'm hoping we do something like this again. Not like this. Maybe a little easier. Yeah.
Dr. Gandhi, you know, we're going to talk about with Dr. Fichtenbaum in a bit about what he learned from this, whether this could be a step towards finding a cure or a functional cure. But what's happening at the federal level when it comes to funding for research like this? I mean, a lot of these kinds of studies are funded through NIH, as I understand it.
Yes. I mean, actually, there's been, I would just have to use the phrase unmitigated disaster at the NIH since the beginning of the administration. Really major four things that are happening that are really interfering with the research enterprise. One is a mass number of terminated grants that started happening, and they were along ideologic grounds. So gender ideology and DEI, those are actually really adjacent to the HIV field. So about half of the Terminator grants were really related to HIV research. The second is DOGE has been actually installed at the NIH, and that has blocked a lot of grants from going out that may not have the words that the administration likes. It's, again, very ideologically driven. The third is there was a halt, and it's going to come back up, but foreign research, and a lot of research that happens is global in HIV. And then the last one is actually the proposed NIH cuts by the administration of 40%, unprecedented. Really, NIH is the premier funding institution for biomedical research, really worldwide, has enjoyed massive bipartisan support. And this is really surprising to see this cut of 40%. And so it's not happening yet. There's a negotiation process going on in the Senate Appropriations Committee right now, and we all are advocating for that not to happen. So those four things have really thrown off research. That would include studies like this.
Jeffrey, explain why you think federal funding for this is important. I mean, HIV/AIDS isn't the death sentence it was in the 80s and early 90s, for sure. I imagine there could be people listening to this conversation who figure it's just not that big a problem anymore. Can you talk about why you think federal funding like this remains so important?
Sure. And thanks for having me on. And I have a couple of perspectives. One, I just want to underscore how much progress we've made as a nation, how important it is to continue what we're doing for HIV, but also the spillover benefits for other areas of HIV research. So quick history, in the late 80s, we are seeing 130,000 to 140,000 new cases of HIV each year. And around 2009, 2010, we saw more than 50,000. In 2022, we saw 31,800. So significant decline, but we have a lot of progress to make. The investments we've been making have been paying off, and there's so much excitement right now. Just a couple weeks ago, the FDA approved a new exciting prevention product that requires a shot just twice a year. This is how we could end the HIV epidemic. But we also need to keep investing in a cure, as we were talking about, and just keep doing more and other things. And so it's just hurt that we're at this place of excitement, but it's paused. But I'd also make the point that it's not just HIV research for HIV research. In other critical areas, HIV research led to the development of what are called PD-1 inhibitors, which is a new approach to cancer treatment. HIV research led to direct-acting antiretrovirals that allow us to cure hepatitis C. Tests for HIV were behind highly sensitive what are called PCR tests that are routinely used for other infectious diseases and cancer treatment. HIV vaccine research enabled the rapid development of Ebola. And I know that, you know, mRNA.
Ebola vaccines, you mean, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then mRNA has been controversial in the context of COVID, but it really is a transformative technology. And we wouldn't have been at the place to quickly develop effective COVID vaccines, but for the longstanding investments we made in HIV research.
Dr. Gandhi, you talked about those four elements that concern you when it comes to this federal funding. What are the broader implications for scientific research generally if the funding does get reduced dramatically? Could you hear me, Dr. Gandhi? Okay.
I apologize.
Okay.
Off.
Yeah. Jeffrey, what do you think about that? What are the broader implications if that's the case, if this funding does get reduced dramatically?
Well, I think we're going to see backsliding in progress, both for HIV prevention and treatment. But we also need to think about the ecosystem that it takes to invest in HIV research. The federal government gives, through Congress, money to the NIH. It doesn't all stay there. Some of it does stay there. Actually, 35 years ago, I was a benchtop biochemist at NIH, so I appreciate how important it is. Most of the money goes out all over the country to research institutions. Their funding's been paused. They've often had to let go of staff. There have been news reports about other countries seeing the opportunity this creates for them and trying to recruit the best scientists to Canada, to Europe. Once these scientists move to Canada, establish labs, they're not going to come back if things suddenly change in a couple of years. So we're really destroying what is like a vital resource for our country's future. I mean, in so many ways, we think about AI and other areas that we're fighting for the future. biomedical research has been the one that the U.S. has been the leader in, and for some reason, we're just destroying that. And it's not only going to hurt our national interests, it's going to mean more Americans aren't going to have the treatments and cures they need in the future.
We're talking about the results of a study to find a functional cure for HIV and what federal funding cuts mean for future research. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Dr. Fichtenbaum, I want to come back to your specific study, this Trailblazer study that you and Carl Fox were both very deeply involved in. What did you learn from that research? Do you think, even though it didn't succeed the way you had hoped, do you think it could advance the effort to find a cure?
Yeah, I think we always learn from the studies that we do. And I'm really, really grateful for Carl and all of the other volunteers who gave so graciously of their time and parts of their body, so to speak, to make it possible. If we don't do this research, we don't discover things. And we have to understand the scientific process. Most of the time we fail. And we fail over and over again. The wheel wasn't invented the first time, I'm sure. It took a little bit to get something round. So I think that it's important to understand that we always learn from studies, even when they're not successful. Right now, we're trying to understand exactly why it failed. Is the idea the wrong idea, or did we make technical mistakes? Did we just not prepare the cells the right way? Were they not accepted into the person's body the right way? So I think we'll have more information in the coming months that will help us understand this a little bit better, and then proceed on the next steps, which is, should we continue down this pathway, or should we seek other pathways to try and find an HIV cure? This is really, really important. When you have a lifelong disease that causes so much trouble to people, to find a cure is important. And this search, as has been mentioned, has led to many other discoveries that benefit many other areas of not only science, but healthcare and health prevention. So we all work together. It's one big system of trying to create discovery and research innovation. And hopefully we will be able to continue on the HIV cure pathway to find other ways. We know it's possible. There's been 10 people in the world who've been cured from HIV. We know it can happen. We know that what it takes for those 10 people is usually a bone marrow transplant, which is not something we can do for everyone, and it's not safe. So we're going to keep plugging along and trying different things to see if we can't get to this. Because I think once we do, then it'll make a big difference and it may provide benefits way beyond HIV.
We're going to continue our conversation after a short break. And later in the program, we'll hear how you can opt out of AI help and whether you should. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our discussion about federal funding for HIV research and what the future holds in the search for a cure. My guests are Director of the Center for HIV and Infectious Disease Policy at Georgetown Law, Jeffrey Crowley, University of Cincinnati Vice Chair for Clinical Research for Internal Medicine, Dr. Carl Fichtenbaum, and Trailblazer Study Participant, Carl Fox. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Dr. Fichtenbaum, this might be a question that you don't have an answer for, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you know how potential federal funding cuts could affect your research, or whether that could affect the care you can provide patients locally?
Yeah, I really don't know yet how it's going to affect us, and I think it's too soon to know. I think in terms of the Trailblazer study and next steps, I think the biggest problem is that when we publish a study and we present a study that doesn't work, we then try to go back and get funding for that idea. And we have to go through a panel of our peers who are scientists, and they've heard our research and our findings. And typically, they tend not to fund things that aren't working. So, you know, we have to go back to the drawing board a little bit to try and figure out, you know, can we solve this problem a different way? Can we look at this perhaps in a different model, maybe in an animal model to modify it a little bit that it might work better? So I think right now, as it stands, the prospect for trying to fund this, a follow-up to this HIV cure study would be hard. And that's true for all of science. That's the breaks that you have. So, but I don't really know about the landscape. I think it's too soon to know. Obviously, we're always very hopeful that we will continue to be able to provide world-class research in our in Cincinnati for all of folks and folks like Carl.
Carl, what do you think about this? You've seen a lot over a lot of years about when it comes to HIV and AIDS and the government's response to it.
I think the thing that frustrates me, I understand budgeting. I do. I've run businesses in my lifetime and successful ones. You can't spend money you don't have. You'll quickly be out of business. I get it. But the problem is we're looking at this very narrow-mindedly, actually. When I hear Dr. Fichtenbaum say, well, it failed, I would disagree. As somebody who's gone through the process, literally gone through all the pain, I don't see a failure here. I don't. Was it successful? No. But there were things learned. That's not a failure. And that's the way it's been my entire life, dealing with this disease. Since 1985, 40 years. And so I'm used to being told, well, we didn't get the results we needed. And I'm used to being told, well, we failed. I always smile and think, well, that's their term. But I would look at it as a success in the sense that we learned something, we're another step closer. And in addition to that, that's what I would say to anybody in charge of the funding. If you look at it in a narrow way and say, okay, well, this failed and wasted that money, you didn't waste that money. That money went to create a pool of information that will indeed someday lead to a cure. But even beyond that, as you've just discussed, look at the things that all this HIV research in the 40 years I've been facing it. Look at everything that's happened. I said early on in this disease, my very first doctor, I said, when they cure this, and they will, they'll be able to cure cancer. I said, hell, they may even be able to cure the common cold. But that's what this research does. It gets us a step closer. The things I've seen happen in my lifetime are nothing short of miraculous. I was in the Hep C study. They cured me of it. And that study led to the drugs that are now available to everyone. The AIDS meds, when I first started on them, cost over $140,000 a year, and I took dozens of them. Today, I take two pills a day. Probably could take one if I wanted to, or go to a shot or something else, but you get used to something, and the side effects change each time. So, you know, I'm used to it. I'll just stick right where I'm at. As long as Dr. Fichtenbaum's good with it, I'm good with it. But I'm real tired of hearing about failures, because it's not a failure. It isn't. And I think it's very short-sighted and silly to say we're saving money when you're throwing away so much. Cutbacks, I get. Say you can't do that study right now. We have to wait 6 months. We have to wait a year. I get that. I understand that. But to completely cut off all of these things and, in essence, dump the research and to have our, good grief, Dr. Fichtenbaum and all the other people that have worked to keep me alive for the last 40 years, that is gold. You can't recreate that in a day, in a week, in a month, even 3 years. You know, that's a lifetime. And so that's what worries me the most about what's going on now is you lose all of that. You know, some will stick it out. I'll be sticking it out. I have no intentions of going anywhere. And I'll manage. But good grief, the opportunity's lost. And to the people in charge, the money lost. The opportunity, the development, the research, everything, that leads to an awful lot of investment, and that leads to profit. I'm a businessman.
Dr. Fichtenbaum?
Yeah, I think Carl always brings up a good point. I always tend to be too negative whenever the results don't turn out the way I hope. But we did learn a lot. And this was the first HIV cure study that was randomized and controlled in this fashion. And we did a lot of work and a lot of effort, and we will learn from this study. So it wasn't a failure in that sense. And I really appreciate his perspective on that. So, yeah, we're going to push forward. We're going to keep at it until we find a cure. And I'm hopeful we'll keep up our research and innovation. We can do it.
Jeffrey, you worked as director of the White House Office of National AIDS Policy in the Obama administration. Are some of these funding decisions, do you think, a political difference of opinion over where money should be spent?
So, yeah, I mean, I'd say the troubling thing we've seen in this administration is really an over attempt to politicize things. Now, any administration that, you know, their role is to implement their priorities, but Congress implements the money. This conversation has been interesting to me because when President Obama came into office, some people then were pushing externally to cut our investments in cure research, saying we've tried enough and we just needed to invest in prevention. The scientists at NIH said, no, there's a lot we can learn. And I think Carl gave like an important testimony about the role of the NIH funding. We talk about basic science. So they're trying to learn things. Our robust pharmaceutical companies find something, they commercialize, and that's the end of the process. But you've got to be funding long-term investments of these kinds of studies, and that's how we keep making progress. The challenge is that while an administration should be able to implement their priorities, the way we funded NIH, we've created a process to really evaluate studies based on scientific merit. There's, you know, study sections where it's a first round where other scientists look at the proposals. Then there's advisory councils. And what we're seeing is that being politicized. Just yesterday, there's an article in Nature saying that these advisory councils that are the second stage of approval of NIH grants at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, half of the positions are vacant, but they're afraid that the Trump people will fire the existing people and appoint them on political grounds. But we need scientific decision-making. This shouldn't be about politics. It should be, where is the science ready and what are the biggest scientific opportunities that we're investing in as a nation?
Jeffrey, let me ask you this, because the Trump administration has argued these cuts to NIH or potential cuts to NIH funding are designed to reduce waste without compromising research on chronic diseases. What do you think of that?
The dialogue we've had so far, I think, illustrates that. You might get what you think in one study is a negative result, but that's how we learn things. And that's just part of the scientific process. You know, the Trump administration has said a number of things, that they have these priorities around DEI, around transgender health. But federal judges who are neutral observers looked at this and said, these decisions you're making really are discriminatory. So there's valid scientific reasons why we focus on health disparities, for example. So this isn't about DEI when we say that 2 or 3% of the population are gay men and they account for 2/3 of new cases. That's why we focus on them. When Black people or Latinos are very disproportionately impacted, if we're going to end the HIV epidemic, we need to focus there and we need to figure out how to address their disparities. Yeah, so the Trump administration has made a number of claims, but again, neutral judges, not just, you know, Biden judges that they like to talk about, you know, a number of federal judges have found that these policies are discriminatory and illegal.
Carl, what do you think of that Trump administration explanation?
Well, the biggest thought that came to mind as I listened to Jeffrey speak is we're going backwards in a sense. And I don't want to upset anybody, but I was there in 1985 when I was diagnosed with HIV. At that time, the president wouldn't speak about it. I heard enough from people. I watched the news. I saw what was going on, held the funding for my AIDS meds. It's because Orion White was burned out of his home.
That's a little boy in Indiana.
Yeah. And so what I watched at that time was an ignorance from the top, and it was frightening. They somehow believed that this disease, which is passed through the blood, would stay within two communities, the drug addicted community and homosexuals. And who cared about them, right? That's how the attitude was. Oh, they'll get it. They'll die. I was told over and over again, you're going to die from your sins. It's what you deserve. And what I kept thinking was, I knew that it wasn't going to stay within our community, that educating people in that direction would leave them vulnerable. What did we see? I told my friends who were dying at the time, I said, once this gets fully into the straight community and they get tired of burying their own children like we get tired of burying our friends, then there'll be something done about it. And sadly, that is what I witnessed. It is that there was lots of caring going on. I don't want anybody to believe there wasn't a lot of caring going on. There was. It was in the hospitals. It was in our doctors, our nurses. I saw them do things that, one, violated what the hospitals wanted them to do. My late husband, when he was dying, I was allowed to bring in our dog, sleep in his bed. I mean, but it was also overwhelming at the time. You had at the top people that were denying that it was killing anybody that was serious or anything else. People in the trenches, they were dealing with it on a day, hourly basis. And I was burying my friends, sometimes three funerals a week. I did that often. And so I look at today when they say, well, we're going to cut that. We don't need that or anything else. And really, that's just serving in one community. Oh, we're going to cut trans funding. Well, I hate to break it to anybody, but anything done to the trans community is going to be done to the rest of the community eventually. It will find a way. Mm-hmm. And I would argue there's a lot that went in to developing the procedures we have now to let someone find out who they truly are. In those procedures of transforming people, we've also learned. I would argue there's been great health benefits through all of this process because you learn with every process. If you don't, you're ignorant or foolish. And so I would argue you can cut the funding to the trans. You can cut the funding to AIDS. You can cut funding to poor countries. But what you're doing in the end is cutting your own throat. I guarantee you of that. I've watched it. I learned. I think Dr. Fichtenbaum understands what I'm saying. He certainly learned. I've watched him age over the years. And so that's what makes me so sad about all of this. Hatred and anger towards one group. And it blinds you so badly you don't see that it's just turning that hatred right back to yourself. They have children that will die as a result of this. And so I would argue to those people that are in charge, you know, take a deeper look. Talk to your families. Stop looking at it as one direction or one thing. Take those blinders off. Expand your view. That's what bothers me the most. It's so narrow-minded and so one-directional that they fail to see how it spreads out and hurts everything else.
Could I make a comment?
Very quickly, yes.
Yeah, so I just want to say there's been a bipartisan legacy of leadership on HIV, and in his first administration, President Trump launched the Ending the HIV Epidemic Initiative. He built a great legacy, but that is at risk if we see a resurgence of HIV domestically and globally now.
Well, I've been talking with University of Cincinnati Vice Chair for Clinical Research for Internal Medicine, Dr. Carl Fichtenbaum, Trailblazer Study Participant, Carl Fox, Director of the Center for HIV and Infectious Disease Policy at Georgetown Law, Jeffrey Crowley, and Director of the UCSF Bay Area Center for AIDS Research, Dr. Monica Gandhi. Thank you all so much for your time today.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Lucy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, we'll hear how to opt out of help from AI and whether you should. This is Cincinnati Edition.